So basically, I am here in Sri Aurobindo Ashram, Pondicherry. And my background is I have worked with the Indian Air Force as a doctor. And now I am here for the last 22 years. So, what shall I say? I mean, any questions? Otherwise, just I can speak anything, but that's not the point. And question answers can be with any issue related to life or yoga or whatever. Except, of course, illness consultation, because then this is not the setup for that. And my answers would be in Mother and Sri Aurobindo's light and the background of my experience over 30-40 years. So, we can start with the questions. Mm-hmm. Just feel free. There's nothing to hesitate.
What made you come here?
My quest, that's a very good question. So I was in FMC, Pune, and I was studying medicine. I have a typical traditional background. Parents are Hindus, they all the traditional pujas. So I studied as a child out of interest, some Vedas, Upanishads, Gita, all the traditional books, Puranas, all kinds of philosophies. Hindu and other religions and Western thought, but that's parallel to my MBBS studies, okay? MBBS was going on, but my interest, and then I had a lot of questions which I couldn't find the answers. I read Vivekananda and Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa also, many, plenty of books. So one question was why there is, because from childhood I have seen worship of God, and I also, as a child, I used to worship, I mean, like any other home. But then why there is so much suffering and pain? So this was one question. So the standard answer that karma didn't really go well with me, because the world is made in such a way and man is ignorant. So how much can we blame human beings for their karma? If you have all the knowledge from childhood and all the acumen, then it's okay that, you know. But most of the time people act, they don't know. They are bound by their nature, as the Gita puts it. Then the goal of moksha also I felt is quite, I felt it selfish. I mean, I escape into nirvana, but what happens to the world? Then another thing, that world is an illusion, that also made me feel strange. It's like, how this illusion came into being? Why am I here? So these were questions I guess a lot of people nowadays ask. So then I sort of became an agnostic. Agnostic is not a theist. It's like I don't know the answer. It's like that. But that made me feel very aimless. Because if there is no God, then I felt it's nonsense. I mean, if there is no God, then what aim can you put forward? At the end, you have to die, so it doesn't make sense. And just then, Sri Aurobindo pulled me, and one of his Mahavakyas, all life is yoga, that touched me very deeply. As I read Sri Aurobindo, I found all my answers. So this was 84, 85. Then I obviously wanted to come here, and I had no idea. So anyways, I came here. That's a long story. On YouTube now all this is available, my journey. But I came here and then it started. And since then it's all beautiful. I mean, life as such was very kind to me. It's not like I had any... household was fine. Parents were very nice. And it was very easy walkthrough. 16 and a half, getting into a premier medical college, what else you want? But my questions were the problem. So I found the answers, and then I have Then, since then, it's a long journey. It's a beautiful journey. Challenging journey also. But that is no journey which is taking you to the heights of human possibility can be without challenges. In fact, no journey can be without challenges. Only thing is how we take these challenges is up to us. Our attitudes, some breakdown, some complaint, some build theories, karma, some endure, some have faith when crisis comes, some lose faith when crisis comes. So ultimately when we understand that these are challenges for our growth, evolutionary challenges, not punishments for some karma. And if I take these challenges well, I'll grow. Like in cricket match, if you have a bouncer, you don't blame your karma or destiny. You just learn how to play well. That's what is given to us. And to play well is not to play cunningly, because there are rules of the game. And if you try to bend the rules or change the rules, then life hits you back in another way. So that's how you keep growing. And Mother and Sri Aurobindo have said almost everything on everything, in essence. Essence. So it can be applied to every area of life, from birth to the beyond. Not just death doesn't exist at that level, but the journey for beyond death and coming back, and from morning waking up to sleep and dreams, everything they have revealed. So I just read and read and read and started applying. That's how it is. Yeah. See, good or bad, first of all, we must know what is good or bad, because we say good and bad depending upon my ideas. For example, when there is a loss, generally we call it bad. This is our general thing. When there is a gain, we call it good. But life shows that very often when we lose something, if we take it with the right attitude, we grow tremendously. We grow in strength, we grow in wisdom. Life also shows that if we gain, it may get into our head, we may become proud, we may lose contact with our own soul, we may be sucked into just, you know, all the things that outer life can give. That's the story of Pandavas and Kauravas. Pandavas lost everything in life, but they have become immortal in the history. Kauravas gained, wanted, acquired ambition, that at the end it collapses. Now, why was it so? It is, if you see the story, we can always use the word karma, but karma is a machinery not for reward and punishment. It is a machinery for evolution. So, otherwise we'll have to say Pandavas must have been very horrible people. Draupadi must have been a very bad woman to be suffer like this. But and Kauravas must have been wonderful people to, you know, to be born rich and grow. But problem is that if you put that, then the next question is, why did Pandavas were such Mahatma-like people in this life also? If they were so bad, if you see their life from childhood, they have suffered. They were born in a forest. They didn't see much of their father. And then they were pushed away from kingdom, lost everything. But they remained with dharma. So it's not because we have done some good karma or bad karma. It's in evolution, we all go through crossroads where we have choices to make. So depending on the road we choose, we meet certain experiences. We learn. And based on the learning, we may learn fast, that's the only difference, and come back to track. Or we may learn much later and go through long problems in life. Take for example, if one takes a road which looks very, like today we have things like fast food, that kind of life. So it may look very alluring and one may get sucked into it. But after some time, one becomes more and more restless, because you are caught in that web of fast, fast, quickly, quickly. So what happens when we become restless, agitated, we lose peace? So to get peace, which we have lost, to get joy, which we don't get naturally, we go into parties, drugs. Now, because we didn't learn that that's not the way to live. So, but if we learn fast, somebody at a young age learns, or there are people to tell such a person in society, then they turn back early. That's how people change their life and things change. So karma is there, but as a learning mechanism which runs through lives. There is something in us which keeps on absorbing the experience and learns. And when it learns, the values change. Say, all of us at 16, 17, 20 go through challenges. That time it is like life is going to break down, isn't it? Whenever it may be an exam, it may be a heartbreak, it may be anything it could be. But when we are 50, 60, then we can laugh over it. Because we have learned something, and same thing which that time we felt is world is crashing, later on we look at it differently. So that's why karma is a process of learning and growing through experience. If I put my hand in fire, it will burn. So I learn it. Now, this is not punishment. I learn that it burns. Next level should be not staying away from fire, but how I can use this energy of burning for better purposes. So instead of touching the fire, I learn that it can be a candle and give me light. So the same experience carries, has its gain, has its loss. So we are on a learning journey. It's not good and bad is our ego which looks at things as good and bad, because ego prefers something over something else. If my child gets selected in an exam, I am happy. But because he got selected, somebody else got, you know, rejected. The same thing for someone else is a bad experience. So good and bad are our ignorant evaluation of things. And we also suffer because of lot of attachment to things which are not going to be permanent. So we suffer because of that. So anything in life, anything, this is not, we don't need to read books of philosophy for this. Tell me one thing which is permanent, which I can say it is permanent. Outer thing, objects, people, relationship, nothing. But we get tremendously attached to outer things. So we suffer. But if we, instead of getting attached to objects, we get their true value, like in a relationship, the true value is the love that you share, togetherness you share. Now that love is something which is permanent. Love will grow. Even after the person, we all know that one day one person has to go. And then both have to go. But that love remains. And it changes into something very sweet, supporting through the life. So we have to, everything has a temporary aspect and everything has a permanent value. We must pick up that permanent value. Permanent value is always of some divine element in a human being. Everybody has, like for instance, the capacity to love, one of them I mentioned. Some people have it. Mothers, for example, have it. So that's a permanent value. Intelligence, all these things. So somebody who is using it rightly, wisdom. So all that we should pick up and grow. And the body, the objects, houses, it won't remain with us. Even if nothing happens to the house, we leave. So it goes to somebody else. So in life, we have to always distinguish between things which are of temporary value. We don't have to throw them. We don't have to take sannyas. But in the same thing, there is something which is of a permanent value. We should pick up that part and connect with that. Take for example in a relationship, somebody has a very bad side or ugly side. It is painful, isn't it? But you'll also see very often the same person also carries a good side, something good about the person. So we can take that aspect, connect with that aspect. But if we get attached, to the person totally, then we will suffer. Because we are expecting the person to be X, Y, Z or whatever. But we understand that everybody has difficulties, challenges and a difficult side, unfinished product. So we don't get attached to that. We get attached to the divine element in everything. Also to use everything in a divine way. For example, you have a house. So we can use the house in a very, now it's my house, I'll do whatever I feel like. Now whatever I feel like may go to anything. Children may start having beer party, then whatever. But if I take it that it is a house which has been given to me by God, and how I can use it beautifully. There are people who use that house to create a beautiful atmosphere. So that is also something very nice. So even when we have gone, the atmosphere in the house, that you have left as a gift to earth. So always in life we should, whatever is given to us, we should try to use it for the best purpose. So that one day, we are not attached to the house for the sake of the house. But it is given to us. Can I make it a yagya bhumi? So yagya bhumi is not burning a fire and doing that ritualistic prayer. Yagya means a house where love, sacrifice, a beautiful atmosphere has been created. So whoever comes, he will feel nourished. He will feel happy. I have seen such houses. Even I grew up, my parents, regular, as I said, beautiful atmosphere. Ultimately, they sold away the house to somebody. But till date, people who stay, they keep telling us that it's such a wonderful house. They just felt it's a small house. So we can, when we go, we should leave this earth a better place, gift something to this world. So that is the secret of happiness. By getting attached to the permanent, otherwise impossible. Otherwise we take to sannyas, but then we can't live life. So they get, instead of getting detached, get attached to the truth of things. That's how it is described. So everybody has, of course with human, so truth of things in it, if you go the yogic way, is the divine. So everybody has the divine presence. So we don't have to throw things. So when we say, as I took the example of house, this is my house is attachment. This is a house given by the divine to me. Now you will take care. You will do everything, even better. But you are not attached. Whom are you attached to? To the divine. Similarly, this is my son. My son or my daughter should do things according to what I believe. So that gives pain because generations change, things change. But the child has come to my life. This is also a gift of the divine. I am like a trustee. I must do my best. But child will have his own journey, his own life. So you have the satisfaction of doing your best, giving your best. And one day or the other, children use it. They don't realize because they have to reach a certain age. But you are happy that you did your best. So detachment is only from the surfaces of life. But always there is something deeper. As I said, what is the essence of a relationship over years? It is love, togetherness, sacrifice. But attachment is only to the form, outer form. That brings pain because form, any form by its nature, today it is healthy, tomorrow it won't be healthy. So detachment is not becoming disinterested or indifferent to life. It means being attached in the right way. So detached from the form, attached to the soul of things. And in life, that's what we remember. See, I'm sure, I think some of us may have lost our parents, isn't it? Parents. So what do we remember? Do we remember all the, every little thing, all good and bad things happen in every house? Even parents quarrel. But what do we remember in the end? We remember the? Yes, that is what I meant. That's the permanent part. That cannot be denied. There may have been moments when they were angry or they fought between each other. That you'd be, because human mind ultimately processes and takes something deeper in us, processes and takes the essence. So what is the essence? Their love and sacrifice, which we always remember. We forget that one day my mama had slapped me. That's okay. It may have been very painful at that point of time. She didn't understand me. All right. But after they are gone, the essence. So that essence in life we should always connect to. That's how we should be. Detachment of sannyasi is not the right way. The Gita, that's why Sri Krishna says, Tyaga, not sannyasa. Tyag is an inner process. Sannyas is an outer process. And the other question is that normally in human life we expect desires to be satisfied from outside. We have expectations. So that part will begin to suffer. So for that there is turning to the divine. Divine will take care of myself. All that I need he will give. This requires faith. That whatever I need, the love that I need, it's not only needing outer things, the divine will give me. And he gives much more than what we can ever even imagine. But that faith is required. Initially, that faith will connect. So faith in the divine, surrender to the divine, everything connect with the divine as to a friend. I need this. Can you? I am giving it to you. If you think I need it, and it'll do good, give it to me. So we don't, and it'll come, and we don't have then expectation from the world, though somebody will become an instrument. So that's how, it's a very minor, like a microsurgery inside.
Is vairagya detachment?
Vairagya is of three types, and one vairagya can be helpful, and two are not helpful. So one is what is known as tamasic vairagya. Tamasic vairagya is where one is facing either some disappointment or simply, you know, one does not want to make an effort. That vairagya doesn't help. It leads to inertia. In life, nothing comes without effort. That is the law of life on earth. Rajasic vairagya is where you want something, your expectations are not fulfilled. One is desiring something and desire did not get satisfied. One was attached to somebody and that someone is lost. Now what happens? That vairagya comes. Life is meaningless, but it won't last. Something else will come in life to entangle us. But sattvic vairagya is what we were discussing, that when you look at life and its nature, we understand that nothing is permanent. That is sattvic vairagya. It is an understanding about life. Nothing is, it doesn't require a book. If we see life, we understand it. So if nothing is permanent, what should we do in life? So we still, there must be some greater purpose. Let me seek that. Because other things, they are not illusions, but they are not permanent. There is a difference. It's not like this illusion, it's moha, it's maya. It's a moha, wrong attachment. That brings pain. Also one understands that brings suffering. So who would want suffering? So what about one's joy that one was getting from people and things? For that joy we turn to the divine. So that gives the joy and happiness and peace. Then one doesn't need from outside because one is constantly connected to the source. So that vairagya, which is a sattvic vairagya, is helpful. But tamasic and rajasic vairagya have no strength. A person moved by tamasic vairagya may go to a monastery or an ashram because life is easy. But he will remain the same person. No, one should not call. Life is already full of challenges. Because there is a share given to everyone. We should not call for challenges. It's almost like seeking difficulty and wanting suffering. Because it will come. If you call, it will come. So we should neither want suffering nor want difficulty or life will. That contravenes the natural impulse of our growth. But life will give. Everybody has their quota. Take it in writing. So you have to take your quota. Of course, if you want, if you are moved by a cosmic urge that everybody's difficulty should be solved, that is a Buddha, Sri Aurobindo, that's different. But everybody is given their share of challenges. Take those because they are meant for you. You are equipped for them. Whatever challenges come to each one, Divine has provided the means to go through it. Now, if you take a difficulty for which one is not equipped, that will complicate life. So everybody is given their quota. And it will come, either because we do something or somebody else does something. Those challenges will come. Automatically they will come.
Have you seen the soul? Your soul?
Strange question. I never expected. Personally, I have. Since you asked me a very straightforward question. That we need not. Because to each one, the experience will come differently. It's not that it will be exactly the same. People who try to make a standard chart of yogic experience, they don't know that divine is infinite. So divine does not act according to a standard format. Each one's constitution is different. That's why we have so many paths of yoga. Somebody comes as a, you know, bhakta, he comes as a friend, beloved, master. To someone else who is a jnana yogi, he will experience the impersonality. Somebody who is a, you know, karma yogi, kundalini yoga, different ways we go and different ways we will experience. But the essence of the experience will be the same. Essence, by that I mean that, see, it's like you go to a house, which you know now this is your permanent dwelling place. Each one's permanent dwelling place. What is the feeling you have? Aha, that security has come. Now it's your house. Okay? So discovery of the soul brings that concrete sense that you are immortal. So what happens when you know you are immortal? The fear of death goes away to start with. And the nature of soul is peace and joy because it is of the same essence as the divine. So spontaneous, constant peace and joy, which does not depend upon outer things, is always there. The essence of the soul is that it can pick up the truth from falsehood. So in everyone, soul can easily pick up a divine element, which ordinarily we have problem. Look at the surface, we say such a horrible person, everybody is horrible. What good is there in that person? But the soul has that capacity. Then soul always turns towards truth and good and beauty. Satyam Shivam Sundaram. So it makes nature very refined. All the crudeness, vulgarity. Of course, a vulgar, crude person cannot find the soul to start with. But it refines the nature. Just as fire purifies. So, and of course, soul knows the divine, so it surrenders to the divine joyously without demanding anything. Many other things happen in totally a new way of new knowledge and new value of things begins to emerge. For example, our values are false. Normally, we value those people who are of benefit to us from the point of view of fulfilling some desire. So we keep politicians, lawyers, big doctors, police people all on our list. We want to keep because they are people who may give us some relief or some happiness, people who satisfy our desires. But the soul does not value according to that. Soul may see that there is a person who is of outwardly no significance, but inwardly very developed. Like Krishna forming a bond with Sudama, Lord Rama with Guhaka and Shabari, because it's not based on outer advantage. So it changes the way we look at life and things. It's a long journey. Yes. No, process is not personal. Process is not personal. Everybody should find their soul. It's a long subject, but I can tell you how it happened with me, that's one thing. But incidentally, because I have a channel, Aroma, so all these, lot of talks are there on soul, the psychic being, and you'll find talks on what is the psychic being, the soul, how to find it. So details you'll find. Personally, for me, it's more like a divine grace. And that's, now I know it's because of a connection with my previous lives with the mother. And it's a grace which took me, if you ask me one way. And what process she took me through, that I can tell you. As I said, I was a seeker initially of knowledge. Why? But became an agnostic. So initially it was with the knowledge aspect that I turned. I wanted to know why things are the way they are. It was not like I want God. I want to understand why things are the way they are. Then she took me, the Divine Mother took me into service. That again, without my asking, without knowing what it means to serve the Divine, seva as they say. And that progressed tremendously. Because in service you learn to quieten the outer nature, nishkam karma, equanimity. So these lessons were given plenty. And then at some point service started changing into bhakti. When bhakti comes, then life becomes, journey becomes very easy, very swift. So in me, this sequence was knowledge, karma and bhakti. So bhakti, of course, is not about doing kirtan and bhajan, and but it's about giving yourself to the divine. When divine becomes your everything. But it's something which develops. It's not like I could have tried, oh, I must love the divine. How should I love the divine? Because love is something you can't force. It has to happen. So, but in each one, it will come in its own way. Other part of the practice is sitting and meditating, concentrating on the heart, on the mother's presence. Yes, but only doing this without these other things will not help. That's how I have understood. That if nature remains what it is and I sit every day, 1 hour I will concentrate in the heart on the divine presence, that doesn't help. So calling mother's name, concentration on the mother's presence in the heart, that has been very much part of the practice that I have engaged in. But service and love which developed spontaneously, I didn't do anything. I mean, as childhood, my parents had bhakti like most houses. So, why it developed, I really don't know.
So, by doing service, you leave behind your family, your
loved ones, and come. Is that just? I have been personally very fortunate. Because my wife also turned towards Mother and Sri Aurobindo. She fully participated with me. Stood shoulder to shoulder very happily. She is also in ashram now. So that way I was fortunate. But I understand. I know people in whom it can create a serious difficulty if either the wife turns and the husband does not. Or vice versa. Husband turns and the wife does not. So because they are on two different evolutionary stages. So then I know a lot of such people. Personally, I didn't experience that difficulty. So I don't know much, but I know people whose life became topsy-turvy. So at some point you have to make a choice, and I must tell you that once you have started serving the divine, then nothing can stop you. Whatever comes, you don't leave anything. If something has to be left behind, it gets left behind. It's like you're sitting in a car, and you are moving to place X, and the driver you have given the charge, you take me where you want to take me. And driver is God. Charioteer, Shri Krishna. Now, up till a point, people can come along with you. But if they don't come along with you, they want to sit in another car, it's their choice and their freedom. Physically you will be together, physically you don't need to leave anybody. But inwardly there will be a big gap. That's bound to happen. It means both have a different evolutionary destiny. They needed to be together for whatever purpose. Probably in Indian setting, they would still be together. Children are there and society is there. But inwardly, they have begun to go. Which is okay, like Meera. Meera's life, so many people's life, you see. It does happen. So it's not that you leave somebody. It's not that you join an ashram. For whom? For others, yes. For them, they will find their way. A person who is living by the law of desire, I can assure you they will find their own route. Desire is such a strong stimulus. Supposing A and B are married, I'm taking the question. A wants to, is going in that destiny's direction. He is fulfilled because he is going towards his own true goal. B is not fulfilled because B was seeking desire. So B is not fulfilled. But B is filled with desire. Initially it will lead to frustration and unhappiness. And if B does not learn the lesson, then B will find C. See, this is the strange part of life. Because the desired self in human beings finds its own way. And then B will learn through C, D, E, F that no, what A had done was the right thing. Or maybe B, like Buddha's life, waits. When Buddha comes back, Yashodhara got initiated. Their child also got initiated. That is also possible that B may understand after that initial frustration that after all my Mr. A or Miss A, she has taken a beautiful route. It's something very nice. I should be with her. That is also possible. So it depends. But initial suffering will be there. But as I said, suffering is part of the growth process. We cannot avoid. If you don't want to give any suffering, so what happens? You concede to the desire. A concedes to the desire of B. But A is no more now in that. Just to satisfy B is doing or she is doing things. What will happen? Over a period of time, A will begin to be very, very unhappy. She will continue to suffer. Will B be satisfied? No. That is the strange part. Desires can never be fulfilled. So what is happening? Now it says life has gone into a whirlpool where neither A is happy nor B is happy. So each of us must, you know, follow our own evolutionary journey. The fact is we are, basically God is with us. All other relations have their own value and meaning, but they are not permanent things. So we must understand that. That they are here today, they may not be there tomorrow. I can assure you, imagine, does not want to leave B because A is feeling that if I go towards God, B will suffer. Isn't it? That's right. But I can assure you, if B feels desire towards C, he will just walk away without caring for your suffering.
Huh? It becomes selfish.
Of course, people are selfish. You tell me one person upon earth who is not selfish. That's true. I agree, it is selfishness. But desires do make people, they nachao people, you know, they make them. If you are going towards something higher, then it's not called as selfishness because you are going towards something greater and higher. I'll give another example. If a child is supposed to look after parent normally when they grow up. But supposing the child wants to study more. So naturally if he studies more, he cannot take care of the parents the way he would if he didn't study. So you may say, okay, after studying he'll get a job. Supposing he gets a job. A job to do a research as a top scientist, which is going to benefit the whole world as well as the country.
Please, he can hire someone to take the balance. Take care.
That's okay. But he's not there personally. That money provision is another part. Of course, I agree that just going away, leaving behind, not caring, that doesn't happen. But he will, by spiritual life, I don't mean somebody has to go to monastery. That's why I said externally they may be together. But inner drift will take place. That I agree, that if a person is earning money and family depends, yes, he takes care. But real thing is what in a relationship? It's not just providing money. It's the joy of togetherness. Joy of togetherness is not there. Because his or her life is turned into a different direction, which is a higher direction. So always in life, ultimately the lower has to sacrifice for the higher good. That's why Buddha's action is justified, because he is moved by everybody's suffering. Imagine if Buddha did not go. He took care of the kingdom. What will happen? He will be a good husband, maybe a good king, good father. But what he gave to humanity, that would never have been given. So always for a greater good, a higher good. That's what dharma also teaches us, isn't it? Dharma is when Meera goes away, she asks this question. Why did Vibhishan leave Ravan? That's a question people ask. Why did Bharat leave his mother? Because dharma, the greater good. So always we should live our life according to dharma. Dharma is not duty. Duty is a social concept. We didn't have the concept of duty. We had the concept of dharma. Supposing parents ask a child to do something very unreasonable. Supposing parents ask the son to get more dowry from the daughter-in-law. Should he obey or should he not? Exactly. So there is the answer. Now they will be unhappy. Parents may say that we are unhappy, you are disobedient, you are not doing your duty. So dharma is the main thing. In Indian thought, action should be based on dharma. Where is the dharma? Swadharma. It is inside. Your true calling, if you have the calling, of course one should not run away to an ashram to escape from life. That I agree. But if your true calling is now the urge for the divine has become very prominent in nature. Divine is something higher. So you have to follow it. Of course, you do everything what you are doing outside. But inwardly, whether now your relations will come along with you or not, that depends. They may come along, but they may not come along. So we cannot sacrifice that true urge only to satisfy somebody's desire. It's not duty actually. If you see at the bottom of it, it's not duty. It is fulfilling somebody's desire. That is never a goal of life, never a goal given to anyone. Yes, love is about mutual giving and receiving. That is true. But most lives are based on selfishness. It should not be, I agree. But without a spiritual awakening, who gets free of selfishness? Happiness is a natural need of human beings, inbuilt. Yeah, we are wired for that. Problem is that initially we try to get happiness from objects outside us. Kindergarten. Then we learn these objects don't give us permanent happiness. We are seeking permanent happiness. So next step is that we start discovering happiness in some activity that we do. It's no more outside, within us. But within us in the sense, in my goal, in something I am pursuing, hobbies, work, painting, music, dance, science. Then we discover even this is not fully satisfying because it reaches an end point. So then we discover inner happiness. That's the road people take. So dharma, artha, kama, moksha. So, but you have to go through that stage when we try to seek happiness in outer life. And a time comes when, if the time has come, let me put it like that, because in one life, most people just remain engaged only with that. But in those who are ready, a time comes when you begin to see through it. It doesn't give happiness anymore. So some people still continue to stretch it by changing things outwardly, changing the environment, changing people, changing situations. Then after some time you get fed up. You realize that even this doesn't work. So people turn within. So happiness is a seeking in is inbuilt. But it starts with temporary objects, temporary goals, and eventually it goes to the permanent and permanent goal. It could be one life, it could be many lives. It usually takes number of lives. But that person for whom it has become one, same life, he thinks that it has come, but it because in previous lives he has also followed the same round of desire.
So he finds the happiness within. Is it then the peace comes, or is the other way around?
One has to discover inside. There is no other way. Peace and happiness, they are two inner. I am talking of inner peace and inner joy. They are two sides of the same coin. Like in a coin, you have the value and the other side, you have the symbol. So when you get the inner peace, joy is connected with that. But that joy is not just that outer happiness, but very deep, like an undercurrent supporting you through life. That joy can throw itself in a very creative activity. Or you can find the inner joy and peace will be there with you. Joy is the creative side of the self. And peace is the static side of the self. So that depends on the person. But both are interconnected. Like Ishwara and Ishwari. Purusha and Prakriti.
I hold the hands of God. I hold the hands of God always. God is a very great divine force. He directs me. He does me do everything. But still then I enter into a lot of difficulties. What will be the end?
End will be that he will hold you. You won't hold him. That illusion must go. He is holding you. See the joy just by changing this thought. I am holding is effort. But he is holding me is certitude. And when God holds you, when completely he will take you away to himself. And that is delight. Not take you away means I am not talking of death. But when you will be so absorbed in that God love, you won't even notice, like Arjun going on the battlefield with Krishna. Because then nothing else will be important. See, one is we hold God, but with the other hand we are holding the world. So we want worldly things. We want everybody to be happy. We want money to be there. We want house, children, everybody. But one hand I am holding God. That doesn't work for long. Because you can't pull yourself in two directions. You tell him that you hold my hand and take me. Then he will pull you. You don't even have to do anything. That's why he said it will be left behind. Right now we want both. So you know, two boats when you place your legs. Initially they will go near to each other. Then they will part ways. Life of the world, samsara, is very different. Then why should one bother? Let them be what
they are.
No, you don't even have to face. You look to God. You be in that delight. Don't bother about it. It's like when you are going on a ship with God. You are hearing the rumors, the roar, the thunder. What do? You care for that? Or God is with you. It is His ship. You are comfortable. Sitting with Him in the cabin. Enjoy that moment. So that is the change one has to bring. That is what really means holding God. Holding God means that now all other things are losing their charm. People's opinion, people will say, anyway they will say. So, but what will matter is whether God is happy with you or not. To do what He wants you to do. Then all else will become unimportant. It will become, it's bound to become. Okay, so we'll stop here. okay. Yeah, this spontaneous sharing. Okay. You'll find many of these questions on Aroma. Aroma. AuromA. So aroma.org. Thousands of talks, videos, writings on these subjects. Most welcome.